Welcome back to season 4 of Weber Podcasts. In this season where we talk all about boundaries. My name is Andrew.
And I'm Kennedy. In this episode, we're going to explore boundaries within higher education. Today we have Madeline Gom, who just recently graduated from Weber State University with her bachelor's degree in criminal justice. Hey Maddie, it's great to have you here today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I am a former Weber State student. I graduated December of 2022. And I studied criminal justice with an emphasis in forensics, and I'm glad to be back at Weber.
Awesome. We're glad to have you back. So let's just jump right into our questions. So the first question that we have for you today is, the Cambridge English Dictionary defines boundaries as a real or imagined line that marks the edge of something. So how would you define boundaries in the context of disabilities and higher education?
First, I would like to say that I can't speak for everyone that has a disability. I think boundaries are, first of all, respecting them and being aware. You know, sometimes boundaries aren't completely visible. You know, some students have service dogs, and that's a very visible boundary. Other times it's just, you know, being inclusive and being aware that those boundaries may be in place, even if you yourself don't know them. Don't know about them.
No, you're totally fine.
Yeah, so do you mind actually talking about your disability real quick, just so our viewers kind of, or our listeners kind of understand?
Yes, I'm so sorry. So I am hard of hearing. Mm-hmm. I have about 30% of my hearing, and that's with both ears combined.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about how, like, your journey with, like, your disability and discovering it, and then how you have... how to, like, change course, I guess, like, throughout your educational journey with your disability?
A million years ago. No, I'm not that old. So I actually failed the hearing test in second grade when I went to a public school in Arizona. And so my mom took me to an audiologist, and they told her that I just didn't know how to take the test, and that's why I was failing it. Mm. And so I just, you know... we never thought anything of it. And then flash forward to 2020, and everyone started wearing masks. And I was realizing that I was missing 95% of the conversations I was having. And I realized that I had become really reliant and very dependent on reading people's lips and facial cues. And so I went to my doctor, and he then sent me to an audiologist, and they're like, oh, yeah. You have, like, no hearing. So I'm thinking maybe I didn't fail the test as a kid because I just didn't know how to take it. So I guess we'll never know. But then I got fitted for hearing aids that are perfect for my needs and, like, what I need. I just said my needs and what I need. I'm sorry. But for my specifics, and they have made a world of difference. And I have had to adapt in class. But yeah.
Okay. So that actually perfectly leads into our next question. And so what has your disability being hard of hearing taught you about breaking boundaries in education? Like, what have you had to do to, like, ensure that, like, you got the education that you deserved?
Well, I really thought the disabilities were something that just wasn't talked about. And, you know, I thought it would be rude to ask about them or something like that. And then once I got my hearing aids, and once I realized a bunch of things, like when we came back into the in-person classes and I didn't have the Zoom calls, which were really easy because I had the subtitles on the screen, and that was really nice. I realized that it was okay to tell people, and it was okay to ask them to repeat themselves. It was okay to say, hey, hold on, like, because a lot of the time I was really struggling with, oh, it'd be rude. People are going to think I'm not paying attention. People are going to think that I'm not listening and that I just don't care. And that's not true. I do care. I just sometimes, you know, if you turn your head and I'm still not reading your lips and stuff, and we're in a loud place so my hearing aids aren't catching everything, I do need people to repeat it. And I do need, like, professors to, you know, face outward rather than the board a lot, because a lot of the sound gets muffled. So, it's okay to talk about it, and it's not taboo, and it shouldn't be taboo, at least in my case.
Yeah, of course. We totally I thank you for sharing that. Just out of curiosity, how were your professors when you were asking them to, like, repeat themselves, and, like, if you had to talk to them about, like, your disability, like, how did that ever, like, affect any relationships with your professor? Did you notice that they had like a positive like attitude, like when you explained to them that you might need some of these things?
Yeah. Shout out to the professors in the CSI department. They were fantastic. You know, there was a couple jokes here and there before I kind of got comfortable telling them. And so I'd be like, I'm sorry, can you repeat that? And be like, oh my gosh, like I'm always having to repeat things. But then I was like, oh, my hearing aids aren't picking up on that. And then they were very positive. And I noticed that they just kind of themselves took it upon themselves without me having to ask directly for specific accommodations. And I know not all professors are like that, which was why it was really nice mm-hmm. to have the CSI professors. But yeah, they faced me and they weren't getting frustrated or anything when I had to have them repeat things.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
That's really cool. Okay, so what has your disability taught you about breaking boundaries, do you think?
Again, this is just from my experience, but really, like, it's okay to talk about mm-hmm. that you have specific boundaries. And it's okay, like, people will ask me things about my hearing aids. They'll ask me about, like, how it is reading lips and how it was learning sign language and stuff. And they'll be like, I'm so sorry. Was that rude of me to ask? Mm. And I say, no, of course not. I'd rather you ask. Like, I'm so glad that you are willing to learn. That's amazing. But then also I've had kids do this, but also adults, and kids I'm a little more, you know, patient with. But I'll have people like tug on my hearing aids and be like, what's this? And kids, I understand. But like when adults do it, I'm like, okay, that's a boundary. Like, please do not touch my hearing aids. They were very expensive mm-hmm. and they would be very expensive to replace.
Yeah.
And they're very sensitive too. Like if people tug on them, it actually will make like really loud, like, eeky noises
when the microphones tap together.
Really high pitch frequency.
So it, like, and it'll hurt too. So I'll be like, please don't. And yeah, again, it's just, it's okay to talk about those boundaries, and it's okay to have boundaries shift when you need them to. Like, my dad has asked to look at the hearing aids and stuff, but if a stranger asked me to take out my hearing aids and look at it, I'd say no. But so there's, you know, sometimes you have different boundaries for different people.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You don't have to have like a set firm boundary for every specific, like for an umbrella thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. And then Andrew, do you want to go ahead and ask the next question?
Yes. Yeah. So what are boundaries people with disabilities face? So like going into high school, higher education, it's estimated that like specifically people with learning disabilities have a dropout rate between like 7 to 11%. Obviously you don't necessarily have a learning disability, mm-hmm. but what are some of the challenges you think people with disability face in like higher education environments?
That's hard, but I think, you know, sometimes, yeah, like being open about it, it might be hard and thinking, oh, they'll make fun of me, or oh, I won't be taken seriously, or they'll think that you know, it's not real, and kind of feeling isolated at times, and not being included in conversations because people don't want to put up with it. And I say put up with in a very light term. I don't think it's being put up with, but...
But do you think people can feel that way in some points? Like, they have to be dealt with?
Yes.
I say in air quotes for the people who cannot see me doing it right now. But, like, the people who, like, they have to be dealt with because of their disability, and they shouldn't feel like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Like, there's people will still, if, you know, they don't know that I have a disability, because usually my hair hides my hearing aids, and they're pretty small, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I talk pretty decently and stuff. I speak orally a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't see that. And so when I ask them to repeat themselves, people be like, oh, never mind. Oh, it's not worth it. And they'll get frustrated.
Yeah.
And that's just me. So a learning disability where you do need that extra time sometimes, I would think it'd be very frustrating and isolating, and feeling like sometimes you're not worth to be part of the conversation, or worth having the accommodations that you need.
Thank you for sharing that. We really appreciate that.
And I just wanted to add, like, is that partially just because the education system is designed for able-bodied students and not necessarily designed to help accommodate for everyone with disability? Do you think that's kind of a thing?
I would say yes. It is, I think, you know, the education is kind of like a cookie cutter. You know, they teach you like, oh, this is what the students are like. And they're kind of, I think now people are learning that everyone is really, really different and has different abilities, whether it's that learning or if they're able-bodied. And, you know, that the world shouldn't just be built around able-bodied people.
Hopefully, yeah, I think that that's really interesting. We were talking about feelings of isolation that you might have been feeling, like, with your disability and stuff. And so I wanted to talk about, like, do you think, like, after discovering that you had a disability and accepting it and your journey with it, have you been able to, like, find, like, a community, you think, like, with your disability?
Oh, absolutely. So I started taking sign language classes, and I would go to these things called deaf nights. And it was people in the deaf community, whether they're hard of hearing or completely deaf, or are, you know, have friends and family that are in the deaf community, or they're learning sign language and want to work on that. They go to a bar, or they go to like a bingo night together. And it's so fun. And there's such like a great community of in the deaf culture. And I was very nervous because I do have some of my hearing. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to be too hearing for this. Mm. But then I'm too deaf for the hearing world. And no, they welcomed me in with open arms, and they made jokes when I was still learning how to sign. I made some interesting errors with my sign language. And oh my gosh, they are fantastic and great dancers. And I love it. I absolutely love this community.
Do you want to share a story of when you might have miscommunicated something while signing and they had like a really good attitude about it? Maddie's actually one of my really good friends, and so I feel like I remember you telling me about this.
Yes. So I have two. One was when I was learning sign language, and I was talking to a deaf professor actually here at Weber State, and unfortunately I'm so bad with names. But we were at the Pi together. And he was asking me my story of, and I kept saying, oh, I found out this, I found out. And he just kind of was looking at me, and I was like, oh, like what? Oh, shoot. Like he's not interested. And he goes, you're a ghost? And I was like, what? And he goes, that's the sign for I'm a ghost. And I was like, oh, I was trying to say I found out. And so I was saying I'm a ghost to him over and over. And then when someone was learning sign language and talking to me, they, I'm going to try to keep it PG. that's why it was so funny. And the thing is that, like, if you can laugh it off, then, like, you're fine. But yeah, they said, it's nice to meet you to me, but they accidentally said, it's nice to sex you. Ooh, to nice. Me. And I had I was meeting them. So I laughed, but then I was like, it's this. And, you know, he had a pretty, he thought it was funny too. He was a little embarrassed, but, like, again, if you can laugh it off,
yeah,
you're golden. So
I love that you've been able to find a community and also just, like, be growing and learning about your disability and then being able to connect with other people. Because I think, like, what you were talking about before, like, the lack of that community sometimes can maybe dissuade students from even asking for help or mm-hmm. maybe even, like, pursuing higher education or a college degree or mm-hmm. anything like that.
And,
so,
and talking about the fact you have that community, let's talk about people, like, outside of that community who aren't familiar with that community. What do you think able-bodied individuals what do you think able-bodied individuals do not get about having a physical disability?
I think it's a little different for everyone. And I think that able-bodied people really just need to understand and have an open mind. Mm. You know, there was one time where I was speaking sign language to a hearing friend who just knew sign language. But there was this other guy that was there, and we had kind of been having a conversation with him, but then he turned and started talking to other friends. And then he was like, what are you saying? Why are you talking about me? And got really upset that we were like having our own side conversation, even though he had kind of stepped away. And, you know, have an open mind. If it's okay. Sometimes sign language is really a lot better for me at times, especially like in a loud environment where the hearing aids kind of get crossed and it's hard to hear things. And so I think having an open mind and, like, understanding, okay, physical disabilities, you know, sometimes they're not seen as super well. And so just be conscious. Oh, my gosh.
Conscious?
Yes, conscious. Oh, my gosh.
No, you're totally
be conscious
fine.
That, you know, you might not know everything.
Yeah.
Because he thought I was trying to be rude, but really it just was better for me to be talking in sign language with my friend, because we were in the Shepherd's Union and it was around lunchtime. So
it's loud.
It was very loud, and like it was really hard. And we were eating lunch, so I'm like not reading her lips, and yeah, so there.
Andrew, do you want to go ahead and take the next question as well?
For sure. So what do you think are the common things that can discourage disabled students from pursuing a college degree or higher education?
I think just not knowing about the resources that are on campus. Weber State has been great with resources, with so many things, you know, like they have the Women's Center and they have students with disabilities and things like that. And it's so easy to reach out. And I think a lot of students are unaware that we have these resources. Like when I kind of accepted that I do have a disability, and it took time, I reached out to the disability senator, and I was really nervous at first. And again, I'm so bad with names. And this was a few years ago, too. It was like 2020, and so I'm so bad with names. But she was so helpful, and she put me in the right direction of, like, resources that I have, and, like, kind of helped me be like, okay, so this is how you can talk to professors about this. And the syllabus, you know, they have things on here. And so I think just not knowing the resources that the university offers might be a deterrent, which is unfortunate, but
because those resources are available.
Yeah, they are available, and they're not just, oh, we have them just to have them. You can tell the people actually really care about what they're doing too, which is really nice.
Awesome. Thank you again. All right, so the next question that we have for you is this might be a generalization, but we've heard just like in our research that people with disabilities are often very creative and adaptable when it comes to accessibility. And we wanted to know if you have any examples of ways that you've like had to adapt or be creative, like while you're pursuing your degree with your disability being hard of hearing.
Well, adaptability was really becoming reliant on lip reading as a child.
Yeah.
But as getting my degree, so in the CSI field that you have to have a lot of chemistry tools and toys, and they're so fun. I'm such a nerd. They're so fun. But a lot of them have timers, and a ding will go off. For example, there's what's called a cyanacrylate fuming chamber, and basically that's just a fancy term for super glue.
That's
right.
Cyanacrylate, yeah. It's a fancy word for super glue. And what you do is actually you put it in like this huge, like humid chamber, and then an item, obviously, and you leave it in there, and it basically cooks out fingerprints that are not visible to the naked eye. And so
me and Andrew are both just making faces.
This is so cool.
We're all comm majors.
It's so fun. I love it.
Never have played with the scientific toys that you're talking about. Keep going.
But if you... if you leave those items in there too long, one, you can overcook the prints, but then two, you can actually create a toxic fume.
What?
So, yes. So when the ding goes off, you gotta open the door.
Yeah.
Bro, if I mess up in my field, it's just like, oh, the camera's on the wrong screen at the wrong time.
Yeah,
it's
right.
not, oh, I could kill someone with this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna
say, delete.
I think it's like cyanide gas or something that it creates. I can't remember.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So yeah, if you overcook it. So I have actually, I set a personal timer on my watch that vibrates. So in case I don't hear the ding, I'm, you know, not going to have to evacuate the lab or anything like that.
Gosh.
So I've had to adapt that way. And then I've had to adapt in this was not cheating. I promise. It was not cheating.
Good preface. Please continue.
But during lectures, if I did miss something and I didn't want to interrupt the class, I had my lab partner that would sit next to me, and I was actually, I got really good at reading her notes and typing and stuff. And she let me, she knew what I was doing.
She knew. She's like, let me preface with a few things.
Yes, she knew.
Warning, Weber Podcasts does not endorse cheating in
any
way.
Yes, and I didn't cheat. But you know, if he was in this big spiel of like, oh, and this compound and this and this and this, you know, I don't want to interrupt that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, and I asked to repeat themselves. So yeah, I kind of like got decent at that, which was interesting.
It's really nice that you were able to talk with one of your classmates about that, just explaining yourself and not having them, you know, take it as like you cheating or taking advantage of them. So.
Yes. And she was super great, very understanding of it. And sometimes, like, even before I would look at her screen, I guess, like, I'd have a face of, like, oh, I missed that. Mm-hmm. And so she'd, like, turn her screen for me.
Oh, she got it, yeah.
And so she, like, would know before I did sometimes. And so that was really nice. So, yeah, that's, I mean, there's other things, but those are good examples, I think.
Thank you so much. Those are awesome.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So talking about specifically going kind of back to the discussion of able-bodied individuals versus people with physical disabilities. How are chronic diseases and disabilities different in regards to boundaries? So, for example, someone who was in a wheelchair for a week, or let's say someone just, I don't know, had their ears popped for like 20 seconds or something. How is that experience? How do you explain to somebody like, oh, they've experienced this for like a week, and that's different from you experiencing that your whole life?
Yeah. I mean, you know the phrase, walk a mile in their shoes. Mm. Well, a mile's just a mile. I mean, it's good. It's good to kind of become aware. But, it kind of really is the tip of the iceberg.
Mm.
So, like, when I was in sign language classes with people who were hearing, the professor would ask them to not speak orally for a day for sign language, because they would use sign language as a second language, and that was helpful. But then they got to see how frustrating it was when someone didn't understand you, like at the store. And it does open their eyes a little bit, and I'm thankful for it. But yeah, that's just a day.
Yeah.
And I think understanding that and being aware that you don't have the full experience, you don't know the full story, and you should continue to ask questions and continue to learn. I think that's a great way to be inclusive of disabled people.
Love it. Thank you. All right. So this is just like a very basic, question, just talking about boundaries again. How can students with disabilities create healthy boundaries, like on campus, and like making sure that they are comfortable?
Again, I don't want to generalize of everyone.
Yes, for sure. In your experience, like, what do you think?
I mean, again, it was, for me, you know, growing up, you didn't really talk about disabilities, you know? You didn't look at the person with the service dog. It's okay. You can ask questions. I mean, obviously, don't pet the service dog. When they're working. Have that boundary. Say they're working. But also, I think it's great to ask questions about the boundaries rather than keep, like, having it be the complete responsibility of the person with the disability.
Yeah.
Ask questions. And try to learn a bit for yourself. Do some research rather than just leave it on the shoulders of the person that's disabled and have them do all the work, because it is exhausting. And just try to create an inclusive community like the best you can. And, you know, check in and see if the boundary has changed or if they could do something better or if the boundary that they've set is not what they're looking for.
Yeah.
But again, just my experience.
Yeah,
no, of course.
And you actually lead perfectly into our next question, which, in what ways can we actually help students with disabilities on campus?
Okay. Like we were saying, we have like those services that you were talking about, like disability services, the Women's Center and things like that. But how can students help students?
Yes. How can we like peer to peer be able to support others in like higher education environments?
Okay. And again, this is just me. I think it's important to also acknowledge that people who have disabilities are not completely helpless. And so
preach.
Andrew, we all just kind of did like a collective fist bump around the table. So
like sometimes people will find out I'm hard of hearing and they will like talk to me as if I'm a preschooler. Like over enunciate and talk really loud and make weird gestures and stuff. And it's like, okay, you look really weird while you're doing that for one.
Yeah.
And also, I'm not a toddler. You can talk to me like a normal person. Yeah. I don't need you to hold my hand. So, you know, I mean, treat them normally. to whatever extent that is needed. I mean, if you have a friend in a wheelchair, yeah, offer to open the door, but you don't need to be like, oh, let me be your legs or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
You know? And, you know, just try to be inclusive, but know that they also are more than just their disability as well. Yeah, people, you know, will all the time be like, oh, you're hard of hearing. Oh, this isn't this about being this. And then I'm like, okay, well, also, I'm a huge science nerd, and I...
Like, your disability is not all encapsulating of who you are as a person.
No, it's not entirely who I am. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it has had some defining moments for me, but it's not just who I am. Awesome. And I think that's important to know.
Cool. Thank you. All right, and so now let's jump to professors. How can professors and other staff members here at Weber State University advocate and ensure that students with disabilities can have their accommodations set up appropriately?
So I didn't really notice this until after I had really like found out, okay, I do have a disability. But a lot of the professors, when they hand you the syllabus, they don't even go over the disability part. And almost like it's not worth mentioning sometimes. And I didn't notice that until I myself was a student with a disability and it was not talked about. It was just, they were like, you can read that later if you have a disability. And it seemed, honestly, it seemed very, I don't know, like, yeah, like I was, it was brushed off.
Yes, yeah.
And so I think it's important for professors to take that time so that the students with disabilities don't feel like a burden, because I did have a professor where I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to be able to ask him to repeat himself. I'm not going to be able to talk, like, do what I need to do.
For you, like, for you to succeed.
For me to succeed. And I kind of felt instantly, oh, this class is going to be really hard. I'm not going to have, like, this is going to be a class that I might drop out of. If it's going to be like this. Because it just seemed so, like, isolating. So I think, you know, taking the time to make sure that they feel included and it's not just, oh, talk about it later if you need to.
Yeah. Just like that extra step, like talking about it in front of the class.
And it's usually like just a paragraph too.
Yeah. And kind of just following up, does that mean like reading off the statements of like assisting students with disability in class? Or do you mean more like just them mentioning, if you have a disability, please mention it to me and I'll do my best to accommodate you? What does that look like?
I think either. I mean, in my experience, the professors have read word for word of the syllabus.
Yeah.
And then skipped over the disability section. And so, I mean, if you're going to read the syllabus, read the whole syllabus.
Yeah.
But if you're someone that said, if it's a professor that's, you know, here's the syllabus, read it on your own time. I would, like you said, come to me if you need specific accommodations or something.
Yeah. So it's just really that effort. Really, that's just all it comes down to.
Yeah, just the effort.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you for, I just keep saying that. Thank you for sharing. It's really great to have you here and hearing about this topic.
Well, I'm
glad that we were able to chat with you today. So we've just got a few questions left. Andrew, do you want to take the next one?
Yes. So what are some boundaries created by students versus boundaries created by the system? And I know that's like a super broad question, but at the student level, what in classrooms makes it more difficult for you to learn? And what are just boundaries that are created by the system of education itself? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And if you need to take a second to think about it. I know. It's a broad question.
And again, I'm just speaking for myself here. I think with the system, it is kind of built around of people who are hearing, because all the time you'll see professors talking to the whiteboard while they're writing stuff down. It is nice that people have kind of moved like to a lot of my professors moved to PowerPoints, and then they were kind of talking to the class, which was really helpful. But then when they were doing like formulas, they had to be written down. And so that was a little difficult with just the way the system is.
Yeah.
But with students, that's hard, because I feel like a lot of the time, you know, it's very different. I think sometimes there are the students that don't want to take the time to like be part of the study group with the person who is hard of hearing and, you know, can't like have their nose in a book and talking to you. Mm-hmm. Especially like, you know, and it's not their fault, you know, stressed for tests and cramming and stuff. I get it. I do. Mm-hmm. I think just having that patience is important as a student.
Yeah.
But then also I think like kind of how you said earlier, the system is built for able-bodied people.
Yes.
And so it's a little difficult to adapt, mm-hmm. or, and it's sometimes you feel bad asking other people to adapt as well.
I see.
So I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that was great. Okay. That was great.
All right. And then next, so we've got, I think like two or three left. So we're going to wrap up here pretty soon.
Okay.
But so I remember briefly in the episode, you talked about how during the pandemic, some of your, all of your professors had to move to online as we all did during the pandemic. And so the question I have for you is like, what are some improvements that you've seen in the school system revolving inclusivity? Like you were saying that when you moved online, it was sometimes easier for you to like be fully engaged with the class because you could have those subtitles. You mm-hmm. weren't necessarily worried about reading professors' lips and stuff like that. And that's great. But has there been like after the pandemic, as we've moved back into a more traditional school setting, have there been any improvements that you've seen revolving inclusivity of people with disabilities?
Well, like when we came back, it had been established that I had a disability. And so I think it improved for me, but it was because I was open about it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't afraid to ask questions and tell people rather than keep it hush hush.
Mm-hmm.
So I did see improvements that way. But I think also like there was accommodations, you know, when people did get sick, I noticed that my professors would record the lecture. And then, so if I did miss something and, you know, I didn't have my lab partner, like if she was gone or something,
yeah.
I could go back and watch the lecture with subtitles and like see what I needed repeated.
Yeah.
And I saw a huge boost in my grades, you know, because I think, you know, I was learning the material more than once, but also mm-hmm. I wasn't missing key aspects of it either.
Yeah. Like so while you were just trying to focus again on just mm-hmm. like getting the information, mm-hmm. you could absorb it as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Andrew. I'm going to let him take the last question we have for you, Maddie. Are you ready?
Oh, I guess.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so creating a world where we are equal, how far away are we from full equality in education? Will there ever be fully equal opportunities for people? And, like, is it possible while the population has majorities?
Oh, my gosh.
Broad question.
That is really broad. I'd like to answer I think this is the second part where it's like, do you think we'll ever achieve that? I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. I do think we have a long way to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great opportunity to have an open conversation and how we can, you know, provide more equality and equity for people. I hope one day we do. I hope I'm a little old lady one day and like my great, great, great grandchildren are like, oh my gosh.
They don't have to like worry about
it. They don't have to worry about any of it. And they're like, oh, I can't believe you had to go through that through school. And I'd be like, oh, let me tell you about
the
day.
Let me tell you about it. Deal with all the time.
Yeah. Kind of how like it was crazy to me that when my grandma went to school, like interracial marriage was not legal.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And so like that was really odd to me. And I'm like, I can't imagine a world where that's not legal. And so now I'm like, oh, I hope they can't imagine a world where people with disabilities are not treated fairly. Mm-hmm. Like, I hope it's just amazing for them. I think we do have a long way to go. But it's important to acknowledge that everyone is different and know that not everyone is the same. And it's important to have accommodations, even when the disability is not seen very obviously. I don't know. It is important to acknowledge them and ask, what can we do to be better? Mm-hmm. But I also think it's a constant, like, loop, I guess, because, you know, back in the 90s, they were like, oh, we're perfect, we're equal. And then they realized, you know, they have the what is the act that, like where you can't fire someone for having a disability. I can't remember the name of it.
I think it was one of the new civil rights acts or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that protects people. And then they were like, okay, we're done. Well, but then years down the road, they realized, okay, we're not done.
Yeah.
And so I think it'll always be evolving.
Yeah.
And I hope that it's for the better. But hopefully one day there will be like equality. But it is hard with having majorities and stuff.
And just to kind of follow up, I promise this is the last question. Okay. But what do you think are like the next steps for society? Like, what do we need to do to actually make our environment and our world more accommodating to people with disability?
I mean, if you want to see change, be the change.
Damn.
Mic drop. No, we love it. We love a mic drop here at Weber Podcasts.
You can't just say, oh, I wish it was better. Make it better. You know? Write to your legislators to pass bills.
We're fist pumping again.
Oh my gosh.
I feel so supported. And, you know, ask those questions. And think, I mean, how would I want to be treated? You know, there's so many ways that we can get channel funding into accommodations. Like when I got my hearing aids, I was asked if I go to the theater down in Salt Lake that's like a circle.
Oh, it's not Eccles. What's it called? Hale?
Yes, Hale Theater. Because I love musicals and I love plays. I think they're so fun. Well, Hale Theater actually has accommodations for people that are hard of hearing.
Amazing.
But apart from sign language shows, they actually have a copper lining. And so that you can actually sync your hearing aids directly to the
microphones. Really?
Yeah. So you can, it's like basically having like headphones on for the show.
That's so cool.
And I was told by that audiologist that helped me fit. She's like, it sucks though, because Hale's the only theater in Utah that does that.
Yeah, you'd think that like every theater would do that. Yeah.
But shout out to Weber State. I went and saw Sweeney Todd in the fall. They have that as
Let's go.
I was so excited because I was sitting pretty far back too. So I was like, oh, but then, you know, they had that little logo where it has like an ear with a line in it. Yeah. And that kind of is the indicator that, hey. And so I was like, oh my gosh. And
I love that.
I enjoy musicals so much more now that I can do that.
And the thing is, like, I don't know about, you know, costs or like installing stuff like that, but like seeing the look on your face as you're telling me about like these accommodations that these theaters have made, like, that just makes you so happy, and it makes like your like experience at these places so much better. And so I think this is like a good indicator that I just smacked the table. I think this is a good indicator that businesses like universities and other things and other institutions and establishments like that should be working to make a more inclusive environment as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like it would provide more business and stuff for them too. I mean,
yeah.
Of course I'm going to come back to Weber State now that I know that I can fully experience the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it gets more business for them, and I'm going to tell people about it, like the podcasts.
Yeah.
And
everything.
Yeah.
So, I think it's important to, you know, try to make those differences and try to make people feel included. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Maddie, thank you so much for being here today and telling us more about your journey with being hard of hearing and answering all of our questions. I think that's all that we have for you today. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we sign off?
Any resources or anything you want to shout out, anything like that?
I think the disability senator is a great resource, especially if you're just kind of discovering that you have a disability and you're not really sure where to go, or if you're just an incoming freshman who already knows and has experiences. I think that's a great resource, because at least for me, it was a great first step. The disability services, and you know, your friends as well,
yes,
that kind of know you. And also all these questions, I was just speaking from my experience. I'm not trying to speak for everyone. I know everyone's different, so please don't think I was speaking for you. I was just speaking for myself.
Perfect. And we are so thankful that you were willing to share and talk about your journey. And I guess that's all we have for you today at Weber Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much, Maddie.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, it was a blast. Welcome back to
Boundary Breakthroughs.
In this recurring segment, we'll take a look at a notable boundary in history, science, general society, or any other significant advancement. Our boundary breakthrough for this week focuses on a first-generation student here at Weber State University, Lily Nunley. We're lucky to have Lily here today in the studio. Lily, tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey as a first-generation college student at Weber State University.
Hello. So I was born and raised in Utah. And growing up, I didn't have really any examples of, like, educational success. And I am not only, like, the first in my family to attend college, but also the first ever to graduate high school and, like, the first female, really, in history of my family to ever graduate high school. And so I always knew that if I wanted to change the pattern of what I was observing around me within my family unit, then I had to just really focus on my education and work really hard. And so I've been really blessed with the opportunity to come to Weber State. So it's been great.
What are you majoring in?
My major is communications with an emphasis in civic advocacy.
I love it. Thank you so much. And so you're talking about your journey coming here. Have you run into any problems here at Weber State University being a first-gen student specifically?
For sure. I think that a couple of the other first-generation students that I've spoken to can kind of connect with me on this, that it is kind of an isolating feeling, and it's really, really intimidating. I had a couple of friends who had already, you know, started classes at Weber State or gone to other colleges or universities, and they were great at helping me and kind of helping me navigate the system. But really, without anyone in my direct family unit or anyone really super close to me, just every aspect of starting college was so intimidating, even just the idea of starting itself.
Absolutely.
Was so overwhelming.
Yeah, I remember, I'm a first generation student also, and I remember like having to fill out FAFSA
For
the first time, and I was like on the phone with my sister, and I was like, what do I do? Like, what is even happening?
Yeah.
And then like the whole like journey through college as a whole is something completely relate
for
to.
Sure.
Are there any resources that Weber State doesn't have that you think would be really helpful to first-generation students in your experience?
Yeah, for sure. So I am aware that we have, like, a first-generation club. I never joined it, but I know that that's something that's available to students. But I think just to benefit students in general, I think that coming from someone who education wasn't a super big priority growing up, I'm really bad at, like, computers and understanding websites. Mm-hmm. And so even going onto the Weber State's website, it's not super user accessible. And so that was really intimidating. And then just, I think, having more peer support of people that can really help and guide you through navigating this whole process, for sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. We really appreciate it. When do you graduate from Weber State?
So I'm only a sophomore, so I've got a little while longer to graduate. Yeah.
Well, we wish you luck on your journey, and we want to thank you so much for being here today and just answering some of our questions really quickly. Thank you so much for being here, Lily, and giving us a bit of insight into what it's like being a first-generation college student. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, follow our Instagram and TikTok at Weber_podcasts so you never miss an update.
Join us next time where we'll talk about the Ukrainian war and how those boundaries were broken.